The Bible is the inspired Word of God, revealing the mind of God to the world. Through our diligent study and examination of its teachings, we will learn all of the things God requires of us in order to receive His blessings. We invite you now to take your Bible and study along with our speaker, Kevin Beard, as Churches of Christ present Bible Talk.
Think about all the different ways that Satan tries to convince us that sin is not a problem. Of course, he deceives us about the nature of sin and tries to deceive us about the things related to sin, trying to deceive us into thinking that what is truly sinful is really not. And there's various ways he tries to do that. But sometimes what he tries to do is simply to convince us that even if we sin, it's not anything to be worried about. What I have in mind is that he might try to convince us that if we sin, we can just keep it to ourselves. We can do it in such a way that nobody will ever find out. And if nobody ever finds out, then it's not going to matter anyway. Now, of course, when we sin, we might do something that we're able to hide from everybody else in our lives. There are plenty of people who keep their sins secret and the truth about their actions is never really found out. But what we need to be reminded of is that we cannot keep anything secret and hidden from God. In Ecclesiastes 12, verse 14, the wise man there tells us that when that time comes for us to be judged, that God is going to judge every secret thing. We can't keep things secret from God. And even if we do try to keep things secret from others, that doesn't mean that the sin is any better, any less of a concern for us. Another thing that's kind of related to this is that Satan often tries to convince us that if we do engage in some sinful act, that there are certain things that we can do that just don't hurt anybody else. And if nobody else is affected by it, then it really isn't that big of a deal. Here again, there are some things that we might do that are sinful that even if others learn about them, They don't really suffer any ill effects. They are not affected by any consequences to our sin, and they're not harmed by them in any way. But even if that were to be the case, sin harms us. We are affected by it. It separates us from God. But what we need to understand about sin is that even if we think we can keep it secret, and even if we think we can do it in such a way that it's not going to involve or harm anybody else, more often than not, we're going to be wrong on both counts. More often than not, when we sin, somebody's eventually going to find out about it, and it may very well be that somebody else is going to be affected by it. One case in point that I would like for us to consider today is David. Back in the book of 2 Samuel in chapter 11, David's lowest point in his life spiritually, I believe anyway, is recorded for us. It was at that time when David committed adultery with a woman named Bathsheba. Now, David had been such a great man up until this time. He was such a tremendous example of faith in God and faithfulness to God. And yet, at this point in time, he gave in to the weaknesses and the desires of the flesh. And what we see with this one sin is that David could not keep it secret, and he could not keep it from affecting anyone else. And what we really see happening is that there is just sort of a tangled web of sin and deception and terrible consequences that resulted from David's decision to commit adultery with Bathsheba. Now, if you have a Bible handy with you, you might want to turn and follow along with me as we look through for 2 Samuel chapter 11 to see this tangled web of sin that David wove at this terrible time in his life. Let's look at David, first of all, and then we'll go on and we'll look at the other people who were affected by David's decisions. But of course, David is the central player here. Notice that verse 1 says, "It happened in the spring of the year, at the time when kings go out to battle, that David sent Joab and his servants with him and all Israel, and they destroyed the people of Ammon and besieged Rabbah, but David remained at Jerusalem. Now, here at the beginning point, there is a statement made about David's choice, and the Bible isn't clear about whether David was right or wrong in making this choice to stay behind. Notice that it says that it was the spring of the year when kings go out to battle. Now, in that time, kings often led their troops in war. Kings were warriors, and the greatest warrior was elevated to the throne in many of these cultures. That certainly had been true with David. He had led the armies of Israel against their enemies and had fought them off and defeated them at every turn. David was that great warrior king. Did he commit a sin here in staying behind? Was he to be blamed? I don't know. The Bible, to me anyway, is not clear on that issue. But we do know that David had gone in the past, and had gone in the very recent past. Back in chapter 10 at verse 17, in fact, we read of a time just shortly before this when David was fighting with his soldiers against some of their enemies. Should David have gone to battle with his soldiers? I don't know. But I think that this principle at least is true, and thus it could be the beginning point of David's problems. And that is that when we neglect a responsibility that we have, that it often opens a door for more sin to enter into our lives. Should David have gone to battle? I don't know. Maybe he should have. But we do know that by staying behind, instead of going out to battle with his soldiers, that there was an opportunity there for him to be tempted in a way that he would not have experienced if he had gone. Let's notice the second thing about David. Look in verses 2 and 3. It says, "Then it happened one evening that David arose from his bed and walked on the roof of the king's house. And from the roof he saw a woman bathing, and the woman was very beautiful to behold. So David sent and inquired about the woman, and someone said, 'Is this not Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite?'" Now the second stage here, the second step in this that we see is that David lusted after Bathsheba. Now, I don't know if David knew that Bathsheba was bathing on this night that he got up out of his bed and went up to his rooftop. I don't think that he did. It doesn't seem to indicate that David knew that she would be out there and went up there on his rooftop for the express purpose of looking at her. The rooftop was merely the place where people would go to relax, a place where they could go in the evening in the cooler part of the day and enjoy the breeze or something along those lines. I don't know that David knew that she was going to be out there. But when he got up on that roof and he saw her down there bathing, I do know that David had a choice to make. He could have chosen to go back inside, go back to bed, and just forget about seeing that woman. That would have been the noble and honorable thing to do. That would have been the righteous thing to do. But David chose to toy with sin by continuing to look and by developing a lust for her. Lust being the desire that is not going to be controlled. You see, not only did he look and continue to look, but he wanted to learn more about her. He began to inquire about her. Who is this woman over here? He had every opportunity to flee from temptation, but he chose not to. And you know, that's often the case with us. We face some temptation, or we face some desirable thing that we know the Lord doesn't approve of, and instead of running away from that, we want to get as close to it as we can. Well, do you remember what Paul told Timothy in 2 Timothy 2, verse 22? He told Timothy, "Flee also youthful lust." That's what David should have done. He should have turned around and run away. There is nothing inglorious about running away from sin. That's what we ought to do, in fact. But David chose not to handle it that way. Instead of running from it, he pursued it. Who is this woman? I want to know more about her. Now, once he learned more about her, notice in verses 4 and 5 here of 2 Samuel chapter 11, that David's sin now begins to progress. It says, "Then David sent messengers and took her. And she came to him, and he lay with her, for she was cleansed from her impurity, and she returned to her house. And the woman conceived. So she sent and told David and said, 'I am with child.'" Now, David had opportunity here as well to turn from sin. When he learned that this was a married woman that he was looking at, he could have said, "Okay, I have no right to this woman. I'm going to stop pursuing her. Not going to follow up on this anymore." But that's not what he chose to do. Knowing full well that this was a married woman, he sent for her. He brought her to him, using his authority as king, no doubt, to either to compel her to come or to intimidate her into coming or to impress her enough that she would come to him. Whatever the thought process was going on there, she came to David. They committed adultery, and as a result of their sin, she conceived. Now, look at the progression that all started with that choice that David made. That choice to look on this woman led to the lusting for her, the pursuing after her, bringing her to him, committing adultery with her. Now, she's with child. Now there's a problem. You see, David, as the king, could have denied this if it had just been a one-time event. And anything that the woman said, David probably could have had her quieted and had her influence stopped, using his power as the king and so on, or done any number of things to hide his sin. But when she turned up pregnant and her husband was off at war, David knew that he had a serious problem on his hands when it came to covering up his sin. And so we see that he makes another decision. We go back to 2 Samuel chapter 11 and we see that his decision was to bring her husband home. Verse 6 says, "Then David sent to Joab, saying, 'Send me Uriah the Hittite.' And Joab sent Uriah to David. When Uriah had come to him, David asked how Joab was doing and how the people were doing and how the war prospered. And David said to Uriah, 'Go down to your house and wash your feet.' So Uriah departed from the king's house, and a gift of food from the king followed him. But Uriah slept at the door of the king's house with all the servants of his lord and did not go down to his house." See, David assumed that Uriah would do what any man would probably do under circumstances like that, having just come home from the war, the opportunity to go back to his house and spend the night with his wife. Why, if that had happened, then everybody would assume that the child that Bathsheba was carrying was fathered by Uriah, her husband, and all questions would have been answered then. But Uriah didn't go. Uriah had more concern for his companions who were out there in the field still, separated from their families. And he was a man of noble character who did not want to enjoy the pleasures of being at home when his fellow soldiers could not. And so David then tried another tactic to cover his sin. He brought Uriah up the next night and he got him drunk, thinking that in his drunken state his scruples would be lessened, his judgment would be impaired, and then he would go home and everything would be all right. But that didn't work either. And so David's sin now is growing, and the choices he's having to make are just being compounded one upon the other. And he decides the only way that he can keep his secret is if Uriah dies, so that David then can marry Bathsheba and make it look like the child that she would eventually bear was conceived after their marriage. All of this to cover up his sin that started with a poor decision. So, of course, Uriah went back to the front, carrying the letter with instructions for his own death to his commander, Joab. And Uriah, of course, eventually died in the battle according to David's sinister plan. Look at all of those things that resulted from that one simple sin where David began. But also consider the other people that were wrapped up in this. Of course, David's sin did not remain secret, but neither did it remain only with him. Of course, Bathsheba was affected in this as well. Was she guiltless in this? We might ask ourselves the question, what was she doing bathing out there in full view of anyone who was on the rooftop being able to look down on her? But I hesitate to put too much blame on her not knowing the circumstances and not knowing the culture and the way that things were arranged and even what time of day it was. Remember, it said that David got up from his bed and went to the rooftop. Maybe she thought it was late enough in the evening that everybody would have been in bed, and so she would have some privacy. I don't know what all the circumstances were, but she was out there bathing in view of anybody who might have been up there on the rooftop. But when David sent for her, it doesn't seem that she objected. He took her, or they took her rather, and brought her to David. She doesn't, at least nothing is recorded of anything that she said in opposition to this. It doesn't seem that she tried to refuse. She went to David. She committed adultery with him. And as a result, of course, she conceived. And what did she do when she conceived and found out that she was carrying a child fathered by David? She went to the king and said, "We've got a problem. I'm with child." See, her first reaction, too, seems to be, "What are we going to do to cover this up?" Bathsheba doesn't seem to be completely innocent in all of this. Though I think, of course, the bulk of the responsibility lies with David. But she was wrapped up in this as well. And what about Joab, that faithful commander of David's army out there leading the battle against the enemies of God's people and pressing the battle and so on? Joab was caught up in this as well. At first, unknowingly, David sent word to Joab for him to send Uriah back home from the war. That might not have been considered anything all that unusual. David, as the king, certainly would have wanted to know how the war was proceeding and what the status was and everything. And of course, Joab sent Uriah back home. But David sent a letter with Uriah when he sent him back. In verse 14 of 2 Samuel 11, it says, "In the morning it happened that David wrote a letter to Joab and sent it by the hand of Uriah. And he wrote in the letter saying, 'Set Uriah in the forefront of the hottest battle and retreat from him, that he may be struck down and die.'" Now, is there any question as to David's motive for giving Joab these instructions? There's no question at all. David tells him explicitly, "I want Uriah to die in battle. And you conduct the battle on that particular day in such a way that he will die." Now, what did Joab do? Joab might have looked for an excuse and said, "Well, after all, David's the king. I can't go against the king's command. I have to obey my commander-in-chief, and if this is what he says he wants to do, that's what I have to do." Maybe that was his justification. Maybe that was his thought process. Regardless, he followed that command. It was not a just command. It was not a righteous command. It was not a command that he should have followed. But he did exactly what David's command to him expressed for him to do. And it resulted in Uriah's death. But notice what it also resulted in. Down in verse 16, it says, "So it was while Joab besieged the city that he assigned Uriah to a place where he knew there were valiant men. Then the men of the city came out and fought with Joab, and some of the people of the servants of David fell, and Uriah the Hittite died also." What happened? As a result of Joab's following David's command, Uriah died. But did you catch what else it said? Some of the others died too. We don't know how many. We don't know what their names were. But they had nothing to do with this. They had no part in this at all. And just because David wanted to cover up his sin with Bathsheba, these men being used merely as pawns in his game, ended up losing their lives. How did that affect their families? I wonder if they had wives and children back home waiting for them and had to be told when the soldiers and the armies returned, your husband didn't make it. He died in the battle. I wonder what they would have thought if they had learned that they died because David devised this terrible military strategy just so that one soldier could be killed in the battle. Well, you know how they would have reacted. But this was all David's plan because of what he and Bathsheba did together. And he sent this word to Joab, and Joab went along with what David said, and all of these terrible things resulted. There's one more man I want us to consider in all of this tangled web of sin and deception and murder, and that's Uriah. Of all of the people that we've talked about, David and Bathsheba and Joab, there were some things that we could find fault with them, with all three of them. Things that they could have done better, but they didn't. But Uriah is a different story altogether. We're told that Uriah was a Hittite. He was not even an Israelite. He wasn't born into this nation. He was living there because he chose to live there. He seems also to have been a worshiper of God. When David questioned him about why he was not going to go home to his wife and so on, Uriah's answer was this, verse 11, "The ark and Israel and Judah are dwelling in tents, and my lord Joab and the servants of my lord are encamped in the open field. Shall I then go to my house to eat and drink and lie with my wife?" The ark is the first thing that he mentions. The Ark of the Covenant. That symbol of God's presence with Israel. That was in the forefront of Uriah's mind. Yes, he seems to have been a worshiper of God. One who's chosen to live in Israel and to serve King David. Later in the book of 2 Samuel, over in chapter 23, Uriah is listed as one of David's mighty men. He wasn't just a common foot soldier. He was one of the best. He was one of the leaders. This man had sworn his loyalty to David and was living in faithfulness to God. And yet, all because of David's sin, he lost his life. What did Joab do? Joab acted honorably. He acted nobly. He put the needs and the desires of his fellow soldiers before his own. Remember, when David brought him back home, he had the opportunity to go home to his wife, a beautiful woman, to enjoy the comforts at home and the pleasures of being with his wife. But he wouldn't go. His friends, his companions, his fellow soldiers, and everyone who was fighting the battle were still out there. He couldn't bear the thought of enjoying the comforts of home, knowing that those men were all still separated from their families. They would have liked to have spent the night at home, but they couldn't. He was not going to enjoy some benefit that they could not enjoy also. Even when David got him drunk, Uriah still exercised a great deal of self-control and noble thought and conducted himself honorably. Here is the only noble man in this whole story. Now, what do we learn from all of these things? We learn that sin is a terrible thing. We learn that if we make a bad decision, that if we're not careful, it can lead to many more bad decisions and many more terrible consequences. Should David have gone to battle with the rest of his soldiers? I don't know, but if he had, he would not have been at home that night to see Bathsheba. When he saw Bathsheba, he should have gone back inside. He could have gone back inside and not paid any attention to the fact that she was out there. He probably couldn't have helped seeing her, but he could help staying up there to look at her and lust after her. How many men today follow that same pattern of thinking and action that David followed? They see a woman, and instead of turning away, they continue to look, and they develop a lust, and then they act on it like David did. Committed adultery with her. He tried to cover his sin. And in trying to cover up and hide that sin, he involved many more people and destroyed some lives and nearly destroyed his own life. Bathsheba was involved. She wasn't innocent in all of this. She played a part. She seems to be a willing accomplice, at least on some levels. What if she had said no? What if she had refused? But she didn't, apparently. Joab, his actions in this, he might have tried to excuse by saying, I was just following orders. But he was following unrighteous orders. And his actions in doing what David said led to the death of Uriah, a noble, righteous, innocent man, as well as some other unnamed innocent soldiers. Sin is a terrible thing like that. It takes us further than we want to go. It involves more people in the consequences of it many times. And it brings a very bitter harvest. Paul tells us that we're not to be deceived, that whatever we sow, we shall also reap. That principle has always been true. And God has warned us of that principle over and over throughout the sacred writings of the Bible. We cannot toy with sin. We cannot play around with it. We cannot try to engage in as much of it as we can without getting burned by it. Because any time we try to play with it, we're going to end up losing. We need to stay as far away from sin as we can. We need to avoid all appearance of it, to stay away from every thing that has even the slightest hint that it will lead us away from God. Because we don't want to be led away from God, or at least we shouldn't want to be led away from Him. His way is the right way. His way is the way of salvation. You see, we are going to give account for how we live our lives. We are going to have to answer one day for all of these choices that we make. Now, David made a series of very bad choices, but there came a time when he was confronted with those sins and he made the right choice. He chose to repent of his sin when he was confronted with them, and he turned his life around. He came back to God and he began to live faithfully for Him once more. And that's what every one of us ought to do. We find ourselves in sin and we need to turn to God to follow in His ways and to live that way that He has prescribed for us in the Bible.